Robert Koch, in discovering that, or proving that a bacterium caused tuberculosis, came up with a series of four postulates or tests that had to be met to prove that a particular germ causes a particular disease. So you didn't just isolate some random germ and say that's the cause. Number one is, every case of the disease has to be infected with the virus. And not just infected meaning in the past where you have antibodies, but infected actively. You've got to be oozing virus. It's got to be pouring out of you. There's got to be a tremendous amount while you have the symptoms, while you're sick. Number two, you have to be able to isolate the virus, show that it really is a virus. Number three is you have to be able to take that virus, put it in an animal, and see whether the animal will develop the same disease. If you can't find any animal to develop it, but you still are convinced that the virus causes the disease, you could test it through a reverse method in humans. That is, you don't infect prisoners or anything with the virus, although some countries sometimes, I suppose, have done that. But today we're not supposed to do that. The way you do that is you get someone who has an infection already of the virus for whatever reason and find a way to help him get immunized against it, to get rid of the virus and make antibodies. The virus goes away. If by neutralizing the virus you now cause him to recover, so he gets over his symptoms and recovers from the disease, then you can say it caused the disease. Whereas if you neutralize the virus, but he's still sick, well, then it wasn't the cause of the disease. You got rid of the wrong factor. And then the fourth one is you have to repeat those steps one more time, just to make sure. Take the virus back out of the new patient, run it through one more cycle. Does HIV fulfill these postulates? I should point out, first of all, that all classic infectious diseases do meet these postulates. Polio, measles, flu, cold, herpes, you name it, tuberculosis, yellow fever, cholera, they all meet these, the classic infectious diseases all meet these postulates easily. What about HIV? Well, first thing you have to understand is that AIDS is not a single disease, as we mentioned before. It's a list of diseases. On January 1st, 1993, it was once again expanded now to a list of some 30 different conditions, totally unrelated. About two-thirds of them are the result of immune deficiencies, tuberculosis, pneumonias, various things that if you have a low immune system, the germs take over. One-third of them have nothing to do with immune deficiency. These are the cancers, Kaposi's sarcoma, various lymphomas. Also dementia, the malfunctioning of the mind. Also wasting syndrome, where they waste away, diarrhea, and losing weight. None of these are related to immune deficiencies. All of these have been grouped together under one umbrella and called AIDS. If you have one of those diseases, and you are positive for antibodies against HIV, that disease is now renamed AIDS. So you walk into the doctor with a tuberculosis, now at any stage. It used to be disseminated, now it's any stage. Walk in with a tuberculosis. He'll test your blood. If you're HIV positive, sorry buddy, you're doomed. You're gonna die. We'll give you some toxic drugs. Maybe we can keep you alive for a few months. You're finished. That's AIDS. And it's called AIDS and it's reported to the Centers for Disease Control. You walk in with the same tuberculosis, same person, your blood tests negative for antibodies against HIV. Oh, you have tuberculosis, we'll give you some Bactrim or Sceptra and you'll be fine within a couple of weeks. That's the difference in treatment. Same condition, identical. You can't tell the difference, but this is how it's going on. And so, first question is, all AIDS cases have HIV? Koch's first postulate. And the answer number one is no. We now know from some 75 to 80 studies minimum, if not more, documented over 5,000 cases of people who have AIDS diseases and serious immune deficiencies in the risk groups, never seen HIV in their lives. They're HIV negative. So their diseases are not called AIDS, but they're identical in every way, shape, and form. It's just by circular reasoning, by definition, they're not called AIDS, and that's all. Same homosexuals with Kaposi's sarcoma, drug addicts with tuberculosis, Haitians, Africans with Slim disease, hemophiliacs, blood transfusion recipients with various pneumonias. Same exact things. T-cell deficiencies, the works. They look like AIDS patients, they act like AIDS patients, they die like AIDS patients, but no HIV. Furthermore, those who are HIV positive are only antibody positive. That is, the virus was gotten rid of years earlier. All that's left are antibodies, among antibodies against many other old viruses your body has seen. But when they're dying of AIDS, the HIV virus is long gone, so it's not active in the body at all. It's just antibodies left. So in no way, shape, or form do AIDS patients meet Koch's first postulate. Second postulate, can we isolate the virus? Yes, with great difficulty, because by the time we're looking for it, it's long gone, so you're lucky if you find a piece of it somewhere. Third, can you cause AIDS in animals? The answer simply is no. Chimpanzees and baboons can be infected with HIV. However, to this day, not a one of them has ever developed AIDS. That's 12 years later. We have 150 chimpanzees at primate research centers in this country, and they've been injected, and they're all happily jumping around making fun of the scientists who keep waiting for them to get sick. Also, HIV, when grown in T cells in the laboratory, does not kill the T cells. In humans, 95% of the world's 14 million HIV positives who have had HIV antibodies since at least 1985, for at least 10 years since the test was first available, 95% of them are like Magic Johnson, HIV positive, healthy, and living normal lives. They don't seem to be developing AIDS. It's 10 years later. And in fact, just to point out that HIV itself was, or the AIDS was originally thought to have a latent period from the time of virus infection until AIDS of about 10 months. That grew to 2 years, then 5 years, 8 years, 10 years, 12 years, now pushing all the way up to 15 years potentially. It's still considered 10 to 12 officially. Because simply most HIV positives are not getting sick. And it's a problem. They're waiting and waiting and waiting for these people to die of AIDS and nothing's happening. So we don't know what's going on there. The fourth postulate is irrelevant. Why repeat postulates that have already failed?